3, 2, 1. That's right. You're listening to the It's My Time podcast, a recording of the experiences, past and present, of everyday people.
Yes, indeed. Yes,
and now, here's your host,
you know who it is,
the one, the only,
let's go.
Asher Chua.
Podcast, Brennan.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
For anyone who doesn't know you, who do you say you are?
I am Brennan Robbins, speaker, counselor, father, you know, all those things, entrepreneur. That kind of wraps me up into one.
Gotcha. And as we were talking a little bit briefly, we both met through Brief University and just seeing it as like a great environment starting out as a place. Like what was Brief University for you? Like what did that do for you?
And Brief University, it did a lot of things. You know, it gave me motivation for one. It definitely also gave connections, you know, just being able to be in a group of like-minded people, you know, moving towards, you know, each individual goals and, you know, being able to connect and share ideas and get feedback on the things that you were doing. You know, it was just a really good environment for those aspects of things, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely echo that. And I thought it was much needed for me at the time, because I think I joined it 2016, 2017, started to be a little bit more active, met up with two other people, Dr. Jimmy Shaw and Dr. Pamela Howard, as accountability partners. I kind of tagged onto their bandwagon, and I was like, oh, what's this accountability thing? What are people talking about? And then we did our BHAG conversation, and I was like, oof. I went from, yeah, I want to do this engineering, I want to get my professional engineering license, versus I want to better communicate with my family. And that was kind of like the pain point, where it was that I thought I was going to will it, so to speak, and just kind of, oh, like I'm going to be the one to come save the day. And it's like, yeah, sit your butt down. Like, you're not going to do none of that. Like, you're going to be more observant. You're going to work on your character. You're going to work on, I was going to work on my personal pain points and actually go to counseling for the first time, like 2018, and figure out like, okay, like here's how you deal with things and deal with them one-on-one, versus like an environment where there's multiple people, multiple voices, and like multiple opinions and things like that to consider. So that's something that I'd gotten out of Brief University, kind of being introduced to different people on different levels, and also just having that exposure to something else where it's like a part of this was in you, but you had to be edified, you had to be encouraged and reminded of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
Yeah. So, I mean, take me back a little bit. How did things start for you? Like, where'd you grow up, and how'd you get from there to where you are now?
I grew up in Florida. If you ever heard of it's a little town in North Florida. It's probably maybe 30 minutes north of Jacksonville, 45 minutes north of Jacksonville, called Amelia Island. I was born in Jacksonville, but I pretty much grew up in Amelia Island for the most part. From there, I went to college down in Tampa, University of South Florida. Mm-hmm. And right after college, maybe a year or so after college, I moved to Atlanta, and that's what brought me in the finance industry. Probably about, about 2007, came across, I was doing that pretty consistently. And then I started getting into speaking probably around 2013-ish. And then not too long after that, maybe 2016, I came across Brief U, and got involved in that to kind of expand my speaking, you know, learn different things in that avenue, started the business part of my journey as well. Started selling t-shirts, wrote a book, all those types of things. And then after that, it was probably 2017, 2018. I went back to school, and then got my master's in counseling, and been doing that in addition to the finance, in addition to the speaking, just continuing to add things to my repertoire, and not just getting, you know, pigeonholed into one thing, so to speak, but, you know, keeping those multiple streams of income going.
What led you to counseling? Like what did you decide to specialize in that?
I think it was something that I was kind of doing my whole life. You know, like my friends would always be like, I was the voice of reason. You know, people would always come to me. And actually, someone else brought it to my attention one day, just having a random conversation. And they were like, man, you really easy to talk to. Like, you should think about counseling and you give pretty solid advice. So, you know, I was like, okay, so, you know, let me explore that and actually get the, you know, the proper training, you know, just to go along with it. Cause, you know, I could have easily jumped and said, oh, well, because somebody said that, I'm going to be a life coach, you know, type thing. Just went off the cuff. But, you know, I decided to actually, you know, to go to school to get some, you know, education around it. So, you know, I could match my gift with some actual true training.
I guess what was that like going to school for it versus, I guess it probably similar like you did for becoming a speaker, like a professional speaker. You kind of went through training with like ETA. I don't know if you did Game Changers or just something along those lines where you had a guideline or rubric or like some kind of something to follow. You're not just like doing it off the cuff.
I think what it does, it gives you the proper training, gives you the ability to deal with difficult situations. A lot of situations, you know, people may just need someone to talk to. But when you have someone that may be dealing with addiction or some type of trauma or some type of abuse, you need some actual tools to be able to help somebody work through those things. So, you know, of course, that's what going, you know, through schooling gave me. And, you know, just like with speaking, you know, I didn't do ETA Game Changers, but I did have a coach. I did have an individual coach that I worked with that helped me structure my ideas and learn how to structure a presentation, you know, how to get the audience involved, how to properly ask questions and get people engaged and, you know, how to use everything around me as a tool to take to be able to, you know, use it in the speaking arena. So, yeah, you know, proper training definitely goes a long way when it comes to those tough situations that isn't just that.
Gotcha. You still got me?
Yeah, I'm still here. Yeah, I got you.
Cool. That's pretty cool. And I guess with that, what's maybe something you learned about being a counselor that may have been a misconception before? You're like, oh, okay, a counselor doesn't do this, or there's more here than what I thought it was initially.
Honestly, I don't know. I really can't identify necessarily a misconception because of the fact that, you know, counseling, it wasn't a popular thing. You know, it's starting to gain more traction now.
Right.
But I really didn't have any preconceived notions about it at all going into it. So, I mean, I guess the only preconceived notion is that most people don't like it. Most people try to avoid it.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, once I officially started, I did come to realize that more people actually do it than, you know, is led to believe. But like I said, right now, we're in a stage where mental health is more of a conversation piece. More people are talking about it. So, you know, it's becoming a more common thing as of now. But, you know, when I first got into it, it wasn't widely discussed. It was still one of those things that, you know, not many people were doing. And I guess, you know, one misconception is, you know, that there was something wrong with you if you did therapy or counseling.
Right.
You know, but that's, you know, that's not necessarily the case. I would say that I would. OK, so yeah, I would identify that as one misconception.
Yeah, that's definitely something I had to get through. And I think a good friend of mine kept using the analogy. It's like, hey, when you break your arm, or when you see like something physically is wrong, it's like, it's easy and it's quick to go work on that. But like when something doesn't make sense in your head, or you just can't get over something or work through something, you keep thinking, oh, I just gotta try harder. I just gotta do this. I just gotta do that. And it's like this elusive target to where it's like your brain may not be necessarily broken, but it may help you to work with someone to walk you through what you're not seeing. Like you're standing outside the window of your brain and you're looking in one way, but then the counselor is able to look or say even like the top is cut off, they're able to stand above and maybe look down and be like, hey, what's going on over here? Or what's going on over there? Like, tell me more about this. And it's like, there's something about just being free to kind of be like, oh, I don't have to stay here window shopping and just be like, this is all I see. This is all I know. This is all that's ever going to be. It's like, no, it doesn't have to be.
Yeah. And a lot of situations is giving somebody, like you said, like a different point of view or a different way to approach something, or, you know, uncovering something that someone, you know, may not have thought about in a situation. So, you know, like you said, it's being able to, number one, give somebody the freedom to speak freely about whatever with no judgment, and then being able to help them navigate those thoughts and navigate those feelings that they're dealing with. So, you know, that's one of the major, most important parts about it. And, you know, figuring out a way to give value in those situations, because, you know, you don't want to waste anybody's time for sure. But, yeah, being able to, and that's one of my number one things, is just to make sure that people feel comfortable saying whatever they need to say. Like, you know, this isn't, I try not to, you know, I try to be professional, but give them an environment that's not like structured. I'm not one of those like, oh, you can't say that, or oh, don't say that, like that type of things, because that's the most important part. That's what people need, is a comfortable, open space to be able to communicate, you know, with no judgment.
You're not holding up the wrap it up box. You'd be like, okay, that's it. We're coming up on the hour. All right. Let's
get exactly. You know, counseling is a space where, you know, there's going to be a mixture of different things. It's going to be serious moments. It's going to be laughter. It's going to be some tears shed, you know, but at the same time, maybe some cussing going on, whatever, you know, it's going to be anger. All of those things will be tapped into, you know, but eventually the point is to, you know, get you to the place where you want to be in the end. That's the sole purpose of it all.
Gotcha. And this might be my last question on counseling, but do you seek counseling yourself? Do you have a way to be able to not necessarily talk about clients or, but like dealing with your own personal life, is there a way that you're able to detach, unload, unplug, and just kind of like woosah, reset?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, just like the saying that the coach needs a coach, you know, at the same time, you know, I still, you know, cause I take on a lot, on a lot of people's emotions and feelings. So, you know, I have to have my outlets as well. So yeah, I absolutely, you know, have been active in therapy, you know, for myself. I think I probably started seeing the therapist back in like 2017, you know, so, and, you know, and of course I go through moments where I don't, and moments where I do, but yeah, I'm definitely not one of those people that feels like because I do it, that I don't need it. That's definitely not the case.
I think it's been good for me to see more men speak about that, because I remember one of the first people I'd heard speak about it was Quest Green, and seeing how he's a coach and he helps people through marriages and stuff like that. And he'd always reiterate, it's like, hey, maybe I just need to get a tune up once a month, or I go in and I check in. And it's not always, you don't want to go when it's like your check engine light comes on, but it's like, okay, hey, let's check in, just see where we're at. And for me personally, it's been like, once I finally got comfortable with it, or comfortable enough to work with one person consistently, I almost look forward to just checking in and be like, hey, what's going on in your personal life? Because we're there's a little bit of a friendship there. And it's like, how are you doing? I actually have good news to report. Like, here are the things that are going right. Like, I'm not just calling to be like, oh man, the world's upside down, life sucks. Like, it's like, no, like I've learned to use some of the tools to like detach, like dealing with offense, understanding like why am I feeling this? And even like something, looking at the HALT method, or HALTs, as they say, if you're feeling very emotional, like, am I angry? Am I hungry? Am I angry? Am I lonely? Am I tired? Or have I just been successful coming off of a high? Because some people may feel a sense of like depression, where it's like, you're on top of the world, you just won the world championship. And it's like, man, I feel sad. Like, what's going on? And it's like, nothing's going on. Like, your body's, well, your body may just be trying to level itself out and process, because it's like, you can't always be high, high, and you can't always be low, low, down in the valley.
Right.
But that's pretty cool. I think 2017 was around the time that we may have had that, like, that meetup. And one of the things that in meeting you, and one of the things that BU did for me, whether it was like the Sunday calls or the meetup or going to the conferences, was that you get to see real people be themselves without feeling the need to like wear a mask or like put on for the world. Because it's like, no, we're in this environment where it's understood that you belong here. Like you have value in yourself as the individual. And it's like, regardless of where you go, it's that you leave a little better than when you came in. And just seeing people that have gone from like the core group, and then they've continued to go on and impact other people like Rochelle T. Parks, David Chance, I met him through Breathe University, Kendall Fickling, Dewan Mutunga, like Eddie Butler, like so many people, Brian Keith, like so many people I've been fortunate to speak to and continue to kind of interact with or see their pages online and just be like, hey, like I like what they're doing. Keep going, keep running the race and just keep striving.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and I would say that, you know, that's definitely one of the things that came from, you know, being in that BU community. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, it's easy in the social media era to get caught up in, you know, what other people are doing and trying to mimic those things.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the things that came from BU is the importance of being authentically you, because, you know, something that I say it's a saying that you probably heard, you know, the world needs you to be who you are. Mm-hmm. You know, the world doesn't necessarily need you to be an imitation of somebody else. Right. You know, you are the person that you were created to be for a reason, and you have something, you know, to contribute in some type of way. So that was definitely a message that was heard through, you know, Breathe University, and learning that process of finding that voice and finding your niche and finding, you know, how to make your contribution, you know, how to make your positive contribution.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you mentioned finance, like what have you been doing in that space? Like what got you into that?
I've been doing finance since I was probably, you know, 19. You know, that's when I started, you know, getting involved in the stock market and investing for myself. But again, it was one of those things that I said, oh, okay, how can I apply this to, you know, some real world type stuff? So, you know, I got an opportunity to start, you know, working for a financial institution. So, you know, I did that, and, you know, taking those tools that I learned investing for myself, right, you know, adding the proper certifications and getting the, you know, proper knowledge of the industry to, you know, just be able to help people further.
So did you do a lot of taxes, or did you do like consultations, or what did you do with financing?
Yeah, I do budgeting, investing, consultations. You know, that's what a lot of my speaking platform is about, you know, teaching financial literacy, investing, you know, all those types of things. So, you know, and then again, I work for a financial institution. So I help people with investing, retirement, mortgage, lending, business building, you know, all those types of things that I've done for, gotcha, you know, since 2006.
Wow. It's pretty good, man. That's,
yeah,
coming up on 20 years pretty soon.
Pretty soon. Yeah.
That's awesome. I guess what would be one or three things that like people don't consider about finances that they should, or just being intelligent with the use of your money?
Using your money to make more money, not being afraid of that. You know, one of the common things when it comes to investing is people feeling like, you know, I'm afraid to lose money. But the reality is, you know, you want your money to be multiplying in some type of way.
Right.
And, you know, when it comes to investing, there's multiple ways to invest your money. It's not just the stock market, you know, but whether you're putting money into a business, whether you're putting it doesn't matter whether you're putting money into real estate, but you need to be doing something with your money to make your money make more money. A lot of times we try to multiply ourselves instead of putting our money in things that's going to easily multiply the money. Because a lot of times the time that you're spending to make more money or create a second stream of income, you could simply just be putting a portion of your money into something that's going to multiply it without you doing any work.
Right.
And
right.
That was one of the things that, you know, attracted me to, you know, the finance world. Like when I was 19, I wasn't rich. You know, when I started investing, I was investing like $25 a week while I was working a retail job in college.
That's a lot.
And me seeing the way that money multiplied while I wasn't doing anything,
right,
was like, oh, I need to do this on a bigger scale. I need to learn more about companies. I need to learn, you know, the different yield curves. I need to learn these types of things. So because I'm already doing good at it off of just a whim. Right. So how much better would I be with some, you know, with some actual education and experience and knowledge of the industry, you know, knowledge of, you know, the economy and how those things move and how interest rates affect the market and all those different types of things. So, you know, that's a lot that goes into it. And my experience from those things is what also gave me the motivation to speak about it, because, you know, a lot of this information doesn't get into certain communities. It's not taught in schools.
Right.
So, you know, that's one of the things that motivated me to start entering the speaking arena to, you know, to give out as much information and education on these things as I possibly can as well.
Man, that's awesome. And I think, like you said, being able to start at 19, putting away $25 a week, like what led you to that, or what convinced you of that? Because sometimes it's like, it's not easy to convince someone that's young, or even people that are older that didn't start at 19, to say, hey, even start now and put anything away, because it's like you put it in your savings account, or better yet, you put it in an IRA, or you put it somewhere where you can get back some of the dividends, or some of the, you can use it to pay yourself a little bit in the future. But just putting, if it's 10% of what you make away, and knowing that, hey, every time I get a check, I don't need to always have it spent 100% of the time before it even touches my hand, because it's like, you do that enough times and you're always in debt. Regardless if you're making $10,000 a year, $100,000 a year, or $1 million a year or a month, it's like, if you can't manage a dollar, $10, $100, it doesn't matter how much money passes through your hands. Like, you could lose millions of dollars and still be middle class, under middle class, and broke, because there's no understanding of like, something is more than nothing.
Yeah. And, you know, it's the doing the simple things, man. It's just keeping your expenses low and your income as high as possible. You want to be maximizing the amount of money you can make while not adding additional expenses. And that's where people go off the rails. The more you can afford, naturally, the more you want to buy.
Right.
But it's being able to, you know, do that in a way that makes sense. And that was, you know, that was another lesson that I learned pretty young as well. You know, the same way I started investing young, I remember I was probably, 16. And I wanted to buy these pair of Jordans. They was probably like $170 at the time.
Right.
And I knew I could have asked my parents to do it. But if the answer was going to be no, like, I didn't want to hear the backlash of it. I didn't want to, you know, hear how it's
the lecture. Right.
Exactly. So I was like, you know what, I'm just go get me a job. Right. So I went and got a job at Burger King. And I think my first check was probably like $240 or something. And the shoes was like $170. And I was like, hold up, I'm not about to spend my entire check on these shoes and then have like $70 left. I was like, yeah, I'm not doing that. So I was like, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to save up $1,000. Then once I get to $1,000, then I'll buy the shoes. Because, you know, of course, it wasn't like it is now where, you know, they're gone in the first week like I had back then. So, you know, I saved up. It was probably like, it took me maybe like 4 paychecks to, you know, to get to $1,000. And then on that next check, I went ahead and bought the shoes. So that was how I structured my finance from a lesson that I learned kind of self-taught at 16 years old. Just that thought process of, why would I take all this money I just worked for and spend it all on one thing?
Right.
So, you know, that kind of gave me like a save first, treat myself later type of mentality, and got me used to, you know, delayed gratification. You know, that's important as well.
Gotcha.
And, you know, just kept me in that mindset where I can do the things that I want to do, but I can, you know, I set financial goals first. Like, I get to a certain point and then do, you know, do the things that I wanted to do.
Gotcha. Did you see your parents doing that, or like, I guess you're more concerned about what you're doing rather than the fitting in, the bullying, or like, oh, look at what he's wearing. What are those? Like this, that, and the other. It's like something in you told you, it's like, this doesn't quite make sense. And I think I can still get there, but I'm not going to blow it on the first check. I work, what, 40 hours to make 200? And then I'm just going to go here, just take my 40 hours, take like 120 hours that I work now. Oh, just take it. I don't need that money. I'll just work for free. It's like, I'll just sit here making burgers, fries, taking orders, running here, running there, mopping the floors. It's like all of that just to look good.
Yeah. And I did learn some of that from my parents as well. My dad was a super saver, you know, and I think I got the savings part from him, but I got the doing things that I wanted to do. That was kind of from me, because I just saw him just go. I never really saw him do anything that he enjoyed, but he was always on the grind, on the move, you know, making sure that we were provided for. He didn't really, you know, have that opportunity to do many things that he enjoyed. And I don't know, you know, I just knew growing up that that was something that I wanted to change for myself. I was like, you know, if I'm going to be working, I want to be able to at least enjoy some of it too at the same time. So a lot of those principles I definitely saw, you know, from my parents, my mom, my dad. So, you know, that's where the foundation comes from. Definitely.
Gotcha. That's good to hear, man. It's good to hear the good that comes out of situations and not always like the horror story. And it's like, man, life is terrible. Life is bad. It's like, I started light and easy this morning.
I don't have the horror story growing up, you know, we didn't, you know, I didn't grow up white picket fence type situation, but you know, I grew up with two parents that worked hard. You know, we had our times when we were homeowners. We had our times when we was living in apartments and the projects. We had it all, but I didn't have that. You know, I just didn't have that total horrible downtrodden life story. But
yeah, that makes sense. And not saying anything against anyone that does. It's just, it's not everyone's story. And I think it's important to see different shades of life and to know that maybe everybody doesn't go through the same thing, but hearing how people get through their thing or kind of leave their life, it's like you have a chance to like gain something. Like we talked about Jordan earlier, everybody likes his tenacity. Like Kobe took something from him, like LeBron's the person now. It's Steph Curry, and then it's the next guy. Like, that's as far as my basketball knowledge goes, but there's something to be gleaned from each of those, and seeing how your dad informed you at an early age, like how is that translated into you becoming a father?
And I would say mine mostly came from observation. You know, I would observe. I was very observant. You know, I would hear the conversations that my parents would have about money. You know, keep in mind, my parents had me at 19. So I got to see the entire process of how they built to, you know, where they are now. You know, now
They were 19 when you were
born. Yeah, they were 19 when they had me. So, you know, they were fresh out of high school. So, you know, going through, you know, living in apartments to purchasing a home to starting a business. Like, I got to see that entire building process growing up. So, you know, that was definitely something that, you know, something that helped me build to where I am now. Because it's like, you know, most people are looking for that overnight success type of situation where, you know, I was more comfortable building because I saw it. You know, I saw how the process worked. I saw, you know, I saw getting promotions at work and, you know, starting from one job, moving to another, you know, different, you know, taking chances on starting a business. Yeah. I got to see all of those things, you know, growing up. So, and of course, that becomes something that, you know, I instill into my child as well. You know, I started, you know, teaching him the principles of finance and investing and savings and all those types of things. You know, funny story. Just yesterday, he asked to go to the bank. And I was like, you're trying to take some money out? And he was like, nah, I want to put some money in. Because, you know, I'm taking my girl out on a date. And I'm like, so, you know, where you been getting this money from? So he's basically been stashing money from birthdays, you know, mm-hmm. getting good grades, all these types of things. He's just been stashing money. Mm-hmm. And periodically, he'll go, you know, make a deposit for something that he wants to do. Mm-hmm. So that's just an example of, you know, him taking the things that he's seen me do, the things that I talk about, and he's applying them, you know, to his own life as well. So, yeah, I definitely try to instill those principles, you know, just to make sure that he's knowledgeable, and hopefully, you know, he can take it even a step further than I have.
That's pretty cool. How old is he?
He's 14. Yeah.
Man, that's really a legacy of passing it on.
Yeah, for sure.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Man, that's so cool. So it's like, what are the last few years been like for you, like from 2017 onward and like post pandemic, like what's this year been like for you?
I mean, post 2017, I would say, you know, I had gotten into a really good groove, you know, with the speaking part of what I did. Then of course, you know, 2020 rolled around and my entire speaking calendar got canceled. So, you know, from there, it's just been a process of rebuilding that. But in the process, that made me add things as well. Mm-hmm. So it's like I'm not as reliant on that as I was at that time, because I've added that forced me to add other things in to be able to fill in that gap. So, you know, right now I'm just in a space where I'm managing the things that I've added while still, you know, working to build that portion of my portfolio back up again, because it is still, you know, a valuable piece to what I do. Right. You know, so that's kind of been my journey from, you know, from 2017, you know, up until where I am right now.
It's pretty cool. So it's like, so once the speaking stopped, you still had the finance job. So it's like money, you still have money coming in to where it's not, it may not be as much as it was, but at least there's still like a steady flow.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And, you know, gotcha. I had steady flow, definitely was able to keep the steady flow, but, you know, missing that was a good portion of what I had going on at the time. So, you know, I had to get creative, mm-hmm. you know, I had to get creative and, you know, figure out ways to, you know, to get that back. But, you know, I'm happy it happened, because mm-hmm. it forced me to put more, what's the word, I guess, recession proof, you mm-hmm. know, type streams, you know, into what I'm doing. So, you mm-hmm. know, what I'm doing now, you know, a pandemic won't really affect it mm-hmm. at this point. So, you know, I'm glad it happened, even though in the moment it was a tough situation to deal with.
Right.
But, you know, not as tough as probably most, because, mm-hmm. like I said, I was still able to maintain that steady stream of income.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the principles that I stated earlier, I try to keep my expenses low. Right. So I can operate off of one income if I need to, you know, if all my, you know, so I'm pretty good when it comes to that, is that I try to keep my expenses to a point where I can work off of one income if I need to. Of course, that's never the desire, but right. you know, that's one of the reasons I you know, I try to stick with stability. I'm not always trying to buy the newest, biggest thing. Right. You know, I do have my vices. You know, one of my things is travel. Like I'm gonna spend money on travel. So yeah. I'm gonna make sure no matter what's going on, I'm gonna make sure I got a stash to take me a trip. So, you know,
How often do you travel?
It just depends. It's just whenever. Minimum probably 6 times a year. That's probably minimum. But mm-hmm. I'm one of those people. If I got the time, I'm gonna go somewhere. Like I'm looking at going somewhere in the next couple of weeks. It wasn't really necessarily planned, but. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, one of those moments where I'm like, okay, when was the last time? I haven't gone anywhere since April. Oh yeah, it's time. Right. I got to go. I've been on the grind. I got to get my leisure in. But, you know, yeah, I try to do at least 6 trips a year. That's like minimum, but usually it's more than that. Even if it's just like a little weekend getaway, you know, me and my son about to start this thing up where we go, you know, cause he likes basketball. He likes football too, but, we're going to start going to games in other cities. Like, so we'll go, you know, go to Staples Center, mm-hmm. you know, go to the Warriors New Arena, go to some of the new football stadiums in different places.
Yeah.
And, you know, he travels with me as well. So, you know, he's been able to, you know, see a lot of different places and go, you know, he's been to Jamaica, Cayman Islands, you know, all different types of places.
Nice.
So, you know, he's a part of that journey as well.
That's awesome. I guess the video might be acting up a little bit, but I can still hear you. What's that been like, kind of following the tradition where when it was you and your parents, you were able to see them go from step to step to step, and now you're able to, with your son, take him where you go, like travel with him and have him see the world in different places. Like some things he may not remember, but like maybe at a later time, it'll, like the pieces will kind of come together and connect, and it'll be like, oh yeah, I did go here, and oh, this is here and this is there. And like, he may see the world a little bit differently. Like, what's that been like, being able to have that opportunity?
Yeah, it's really been good. And you know, it's funny, we have those moments all the time where I started talking about somewhere that I may have took him when he was six,
yeah,
or something like that. And he was like, oh yeah, I kind of remember that. But yeah, so it's been great, man. I love being able to show him different things and be able to, you know, have those different experiences, you know, because as a parent,
yeah,
you want to take things a little bit farther than, you know, than what you experienced. You know, we did some traveling, but it was mostly like places that we could drive, you know. So, you know, that was how we did our traveling growing up. So, you know, I don't want to hoard all the fun to myself. So, you know, I want them to be able to, you know, have those good memories, and at the same time be able to learn how to operate internationally, because you never know, you know where life may take you. So
yeah.
I think not only from a fun aspect, he sees how to maneuver internationally, that, you know, if you go somewhere where they speak another language, it's a good idea to try to learn some of that language, like some of the most important words that you may need to know to be able to communicate.
Right.
In those different areas, you know, you may not be 100% fluent, but you want to get a little bit of knowledge of what's going on. So, you know, just those types of things, and, you know, how to do research on different places before you get there. You know, those are lessons that are definitely taught. So, you know, it's fun mixed with education as well at the same time. So, you know, that's definitely one of the things that I enjoy to do. I enjoy the opportunity to be able to do those things and give him those experiences as well.
I like it. What's something you're looking forward to in 2024?
What is something I'm looking forward to in 2024? I'm looking forward to, you know, continued growth. I'm looking forward to, you know, expanding the things that I'm doing, while continuing to find areas where I can possibly add something new. You know, I'm looking forward to, you know, getting more back out there and having more speaking engagements and being able to take the financial literacy, you know, information even further than it's already going, you know, even though it's becoming more popular, but being able to put my niche and my ideas out there as well. And I'm definitely looking forward to my 2024 travel schedule. That's always something that's going to be exciting. So yeah, those are some things I'm looking forward to in 2024.
That's awesome. And I'm guessing, would your travel schedule be part of your speaking schedule? Like, it's like, maybe I can line up these cities, like do a little bit of speaking, do a little bit of like sightseeing, and then on to the next.
Listen, those are the best ones. Those are the best ones, when you can go to a city and maybe have an engagement on a Thursday and then have Friday and Saturday to sightsee and do those different types of things. So, yeah, those are definitely a part of the process. But I like the ones where it's all play, no work, too. I like those also.
Nice. And I meant to ask you for speaking, especially since your niche is speaking in financial education, like what is that? What does it feel like when the light bulb goes off and people get it, either like they're receiving new information and they're open to learning more, and like they're actually engaged with what you're saying?
Man, it's really rewarding for me. I would say one of my best experiences was when I got to work with the Department of Juvenile Justice. And everybody was surprised that I was able to go in there for 2 hours and hold their attention with no incident. Like when they did the little write-up after I left, you know, they was like, this was one of the few times that we were able to have an event with no incident. Like no kid had to be taken out. Like there was nobody rowdy. So I was actually able to hold their attention, keep them engaged, you know, have them asking questions. And that's those types of things are the most rewarding thing because, you know, and especially with, you know, people that are in that environment where, you know, again, they're probably looked at a certain way, you know, they're probably not taken serious. You know, one of the things I pride myself in is going in with the concept that everybody has an idea. And I want to be the person that takes your idea serious, no matter, you know, no matter how crazy the world may think it is.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the things that was able to get their attention, because when they said something, you know, they may have been saying something that they thought was a joke, but I would be like, okay, let's talk about that. Like, what do you really feel about that? And they were like, whoa, my thoughts are being taken seriously. So that type of thing made everyone engaged. Everybody had a question, you know, how do you do this? Well, what if I wanted to do that? And so those are absolutely the most rewarding parts of what I do on any engagement, is when I'm able to get people that engaged.
Yeah.
And, you know, they ask questions, they're taking notes, they're really looking to execute their. They're following up with me after I leave to ask additional questions. So, you know, those are definitely the best rewards that come from those presentations.
That's awesome. And I think that gives kids the benefit of the doubt, because I get tired of hearing kids these days where it's like, blah, 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 fill in the blank. And I'm like, kids these days are raised by parents these days. So it's like, don't be so quick to point the finger at the child when it's like, you're the parent. And like,
yeah.
It's not a thing to say, let me shift the blame on the parents and not the kids, but it's like, hey, if we're so quick to point at problems, we have an opportunity to come up with solutions. And maybe we have to think about things differently and actually allow ourselves to come to a resolution that may or may not involve us, but to say, we're not always problem, 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 problem. It's like, we're not victims, to just be on standby and just be like, okay, I hope somebody comes and saves me. It's like, no, like,
yeah.
You have it in you. Maybe you don't know what it means, what it looks like, what the outcomes are, but like there's a lot more to you than you think. There's a lot more that meets the eye. And it's good to see that maybe in somewhere that's an uncommon place, like a juvenile detention center, like maybe somebody got there because wrong place, wrong time, or whatever it is. But like to have someone like you be able to come in and actually say something that resonates with them, and then they carry that to say, okay, once I get out of here, here's what I'm going to do. Or until I go, I'm not just going to wait, but I'm going to make out a plan and say, I've got somewhere I can go with my life now. I'm not going to get into that fight or that scrap because I've got something else I can focus my attention on and actually plan. I don't need to be worried about the warden or the CEO talking about, oh, you're never going to be nothing. It's like, yeah, miss me with that.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, and something I've learned is that, you know, kids want to know, you know, it doesn't matter what they may have done or where they be now, where they may be right now. They want to know,
right.
You know, I've had, you know, my son's friends ask me questions because they saw something that I may have posted on social media. You know, I was in the gym a couple of weeks ago and just this random guy walked up to me and was like, you know, he called me by my Instagram name. And I was like, yeah, that's me. I'm like, you know, I'm no celebrity, but I'm shocked that you follow me on social media. And he started asking me questions about, you know, stuff that I was posting. Like people want the information, you know, children want the information. Adults need the information. But, you know, it's our job to, you know, do what we can to get it out there as much as possible, because, you know, we definitely want to be able to provide what we've learned, you know, over the years and get it to people, because that's the only way, you know, you're able to change things is to be able to get that information out there and put people in an empowered position.
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, one of the main things is being able to put people in a position to be able to empower themselves. You know, things that have been going on for centuries, you know, the ways people have been multiplying their meat, you know, all of these principles that have been battle tested, you know, through recessions, depressions, and all those different types of things, is giving people that information to be able to empower themselves and take advantage of the same opportunities that the rich and wealthy are taking advantage of every single day.
Right, man, that's so powerful. I guess on that note, let people know how they can book you, follow you, figure out what it is that you have going on, and just keep following the journey and be educated.
Absolutely. So you can definitely reach out for me for booking. You can email me at Brennon, B-R-E-N-O-N dot Robbins at yahoo.com. You can DM me on social media. My Instagram is Brennon _ speaks. I'm on TikTok as Earned Keep Multiply. You know, those are the best ways to contact me.
Awesome. And yes, one more question I have for you from the first question I asked you. Are you still who you said you were?
Am I still who I said I was?
Yes, sir.
No, I'm even better. I'm improving every day. I'm learning every day. You know, I'm continuing the journey of self-improvement, which is a never-ending journey.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for doing this.
No problem. Anytime.